Hello, and welcome to our podcast, New Strategies for Revenue Generation and IP Transformation. My name is Kate Gerwig, and I'm the editor of SearchTelecom.com. Thanks for joining us today. In this podcast, we're going to talk about IP technologies, including Web 2.0, and how the emerging interactivity of the web can be combined with service provider APIs and hosted features to create new revenues and new partnerships for network operators. Our guest today is Tom Knoll, the president of CIMI Corporation, a strategic consulting firm specializing in telecommunications and data communications. Tom, thank you for being here to walk us through how these tools from the internet side can be combined with application and service tools on the operator side to create a new business model and what's at risk for network operators if they don't move to a new model.
Thanks, Kate. It's a pleasure to be here.
Why don't we jump right into our topic? It seems as though we're hearing more about transformation today and less about convergence. Can you explain why that is?
Sure. What's happened in the last 2 years, I think, is that telecommunications operators have recognized that a technology transition, which is what convergence represented, isn't necessarily a definition of the business transition that has to justify it, that has to drive it, and ultimately that has to pay for it. And what's now happening is that the operators are recognizing that the deployment of IP technology is a necessary step in transforming their networks to a model of revenue and profit generation for the future, but it's not a sufficient step. There are other things that have to be done, and since they think they understand the process of IP deployment now reasonably well, they're beginning to focus on what these other things are.
Okay, so in the transformational future, if that is where one of the network is a platform for applications, what are the most significant technologies that will be enablers for the kind of change you're talking about?
Well, if you think about the network of the future, it's probably easiest to start at the ground level and say that all networks have the basic services of transport and connection, meaning they can move information around and they can connect users to one another. When you start to think about this, one of the challenges of services that are built directly on the model of transport and connection is it assumes that we can make communication between users more and more valuable somehow. And it's proved difficult to do that. And so one of the most fundamental changes that we've made in our planning of networks is an assumption that says that future revenues probably depend more on connecting users to experiences than they do to connecting users to each other, to connecting users to user resources of some sort. And I think that the issue with experiences is that all experiences can be classified as applications, even content experiences, because, of course, some kind of content is necessarily served up by applications.
Okay, so we substitute applications for experiences. I think that helps a lot more people understand what exactly we're talking about. We've also noticed that more operators are talking about open networks or third-party access. Can you tell us how this trend relates to the issues of transformation and the network as an application platform?
Certainly. The big issue, if you start to think about applications and experiences and things like that, is the question of where do they come from. Most network operators have 5 to 7 year capital cycles, have very long planning processes, and they're not really particularly good at consumer fads and market reactivity and things like that. And on the other hand, the most valuable applications, the most valuable content, are usually things that come up relatively quickly, stimulated by near-term events and things like that. And as a consequence, the operators are looking to expand partnerships with other players who are more market-reactive and to use these partnerships to draw value into the network and to create applications, experiences, content and other things that would be eventually revenue generating to the operator. Now, all this may seem like a long way around to answer your question, but if you think about the issue of setting up a partnership, if you expect to get something from a partner, then you would expect that the partner is going to want to obtain something from you in return, meaning that there has to be some value that the network operator can extend to third-party organizations to induce them to partner and to participate in this new revenue-generating future. And one of the things that the operators are looking at is to open up features of the network that would ordinarily be implicit in the network, meaning things that are known about a user to support things like making a call to them, but are not necessarily sold or provided independently. Location services is a good example of something like this. And so these types of features are now being exposed for the first time through application program interfaces, or what are called APIs, to third-party developers, to web portal owners, and so forth. And this is where the Web 2.0 stuff comes in. This is where the integration of web and telephony comes in, all of the other things that you hear about in the market.
Tom, talking about third-party access when you're talking about traditional telecommunications service providers is a huge change, is it not?
Oh, it's absolutely. It's a major change. One of the issues that the service providers have, for example, is the continuing question of just exactly what form to use to make these features accessible. There have been, for example, historically, telephony APIs, and the number of developers in the world who understand telephony APIs is vanishingly small. And so one of the more recent trends, for example, British Telecom's 21CN program, and by the work of GSMA in what they call third-party access, is actually providing a mechanism to access network features using web services, meaning using the same kind of technology that would be used to access a web page, particularly with Web 2.0. Mm-hmm. This is a technical shift for the operator because it demands much greater stability and control in the platforms that you're opening up, because you obviously need to have a secure environment. You need to protect the network from a mistake that might be made by a third-party developer. But it's also a cultural shift, because this isn't the sort of thing that network operators have done before. Netheads and bellheads, as they used to call them, don't always speak the same language. And it's been a challenge for both parties to bring these programs together and to make them effective.
Another word, that a telephony word that we need to talk about, is signaling. Can you talk to us about how signaling will take place in this new application and platform?
Sure. Well, signaling is a term that's used in telecommunications and data communications to indicate the portion of an exchange that facilitates the service rather than participates in it. And so, for example, if you call me up, you press a bunch of keys on a telephone, and that process generates signaling. It isn't necessary for me to hear the touchtone tones or to be able to interpret what they are. It's necessary for the network to understand them and so forth. And so if you're going to exercise service control, signaling is normally the way that you would want to do it. And the reason you'd want to do service control via signaling is because actually being a part of the service connection presents performance problems, scalability problems, security problems, and things like that. And so, for example, if you looked at a third-party application that was going to generate a call, that application would exercise signaling to signal the call request to the network, but it wouldn't actually participate in the call or carry the call's data unless the call was actually being placed to the application, because something like that wouldn't be scalable. So signaling is really the key to unlocking the value in a network, because it's the part of network features and behavior that can be most safely and scalably exported to a third party.
Okay. Now, how does all of this relate to things like network operations management, service delivery platforms that we're hearing a lot more about, and also IMS?
Okay, those are all, unfortunately, complicated and interrelated questions. So let me set the stage a little bit by saying that when you start to add applications and experiences to networks, when you start to integrate third-party partners and third-party applications and third-party tools and web tools and things like that, you're making a lot of changes that change the fundamental security and stability of the underlying telco environment. And so if you sort of take the items in your list in order, from a network operations management perspective, there's a major difference between supporting a network service that is always invoked by the user and supporting a network service that might be invoked by an application. There's a major difference between a network service that connects user A to user B and an experience that might be delivered synchronously or asynchronously to 100 or 1,000 or 1,000,000 users over a very short period of time. And so from an operations perspective, the whole notion of network planning really has to change. And from an operations perspective, the responsiveness and the scalability of operations practices, the standard issues of fault management, capacity management, security management, performance management, accounting management, all of those things that are sometimes called FCAPs as an acronym, all of those things have to be streamlined, accelerated, scaled to a new environment, and they also have to accommodate all of these new requirements. From a service delivery platform perspective, the major justification of SDPs over, for example, just using a run-of-the-mill server is that if telcos deploy these types of applications, they're going to insist on deploying them with the same level of reliability that would normally be found with telco equipment. Mm-hmm. And most servers are simply not built to those standards. And also, in many cases, things that are installed in the telco central office have to be specially powered, they have to be electronically shielded, and things like that. And so service delivery platforms are a special form of server that are designed with the hardening, the security, the middleware, the power, and reliability that are essential for a telco environment. And so SDPs are probably the most direct recipient of this change from communication to experience as the profit center for the network, because almost every application and experience is going to end up having to be hosted on one or on several of them. Mm-hmm. And then for the last thing with IMS, one of the challenges that's associated with creating flexible applications is the problem and the issue of reuse of facilities. So, for example, if I write an application that's going to display a small video, I would like to be able to use that application to display a message to a user, for example, about driving conditions if I had a clip that I was going to show in a GPS application. I might like you to use the same thing to show the user an ad. I might use the same thing to show the user a music video. And so what IMS does is it provides an application platform. It provides something that can run on an SDP that can consume the basic signaling middleware and the other tools that are provided by an SDP, and that can organize the applications that make up an experience and in the way that they would be accessible components, so that I can build or mash up applications and services by assembling pieces of things. And that way, if I do that, one, I get a faster time to market, but secondly, each one of these things that I build has a greater potential for reuse. And it means that overall, my costs are lower, my testing time is lower, my time to market is better. It brings just a lot of benefits to it. And so IMS is an architecture to control the relationship between applications and signaling. And so it's kind of a natural part of any kind of a transformation of revenues into an application or experience base from a pure communication space.
Tom, we're talking about a lot of different elements that need to be transformed before we get to, in a sense, this new network. What are you putting on this in terms of a timeline for when everything will be developed, tested, and deployed?
Well, some of this is being deployed already. As I mentioned before, BT already has a program in 21CN to support third-party application development. You can already get from most cellular providers worldwide location services and other services that are really experiences. They're not communications. You're not calling your GPS. You're simply using your GPS. And so we're already seeing a lot of this stuff. The issue is not so much a question of how long is it going to take us to get to it, because most of the people who listen to this podcast are probably already users of network-based experiences in some way or another. The real question is, how do we get enough of it? How do we build it to the scale that's necessary to generate the profits and the revenues that are required to drive this industry? If you look at voice communications worldwide, it's about $1.5 trillion market. And if you look at all communications worldwide, it's probably double or even triple that. And as we transform away from a pure dependency on voice and into a dependency on applications, rich experiences, collaboration, all of the other things that are based on applications and content delivery, we're going to have to be able to scale these current prototypes almost up into something that's as massive and stable and provable as the public switch telephone network is, if we really expect users to develop dependency.
Do you think that IP as a technology?
Well, I think transformation as an issue kind of assumes IP as a technology, at least at one level.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at networking as an issue of delivering something, whatever it is that you deliver has to be delivered in the language of the recipient. And if you look at information appliances today that are capable of either delivering experiences or communicating with applications, those appliances universally adopt IP as the protocol. And so at the service level, we can make a pretty safe assumption that IP is going to be the foundation of nearly everything that we end up delivering. Now, there may be other protocols that are used under IP for special missions, and there certainly will be. There are now. Carrier Ethernet, for example, network optics, for example, are all used under IP as elements in an overall infrastructure. But in regards to your first question, we're not really ever going to eclipse IP as a technology. But as an issue in the second implication, I think it would be fair to say that it's not so much that we're eclipsing IP as that we're transcending it. We've acknowledged now the success of the transformation of the PSTN from a TDM fixed wire kind of a structure to a packet-oriented mobile fixed hybrid. And this successful transformation at the technological level is now opening up a new set of business changes. And because we have dealt with the technical transformation and have not dealt with the business changes fully, we're now focusing more on those. And, of course, those business changes focus on the notion of IP as a service platform. And there is no question that as a service platform, IP is not only the best technology, it's the only rational technology, simply because, as I said before, the only thing that appliances universally speak is IP, and the only thing you can deliver an experience to is an appliance. A user can't directly assimilate network technology. They have to assimilate it through an intermediary device, and that device will be an IP device.
Okay. Well, I hate to say this, given that we are talking about transformation and transcendence and many lofty topics, I think we could go on for a long time. Unfortunately, we're out of time for today. So thank you for offering us your insight. And did I miss anything substantial that you'd like to add to today's discussion?
Nothing substantial, but I think a closing comment here might be in order. We really are at a very pivotal point now in networking. We're kind of at a point of what I'll call the critical point of value realization. We've invested a lot of money in bringing about changes in network technology. And if the only thing that we can do with a network of the future is support the same services that the network of the past supported, we'd have to ask ourselves whether all this transformation and convergence was really worth the effort.
Mm-hmm.
So we're now at a stage where we need to harness this. We need to harness the value, the potential, the flexibility of IP. And that's what transformation is about. That's what's the difference between transformation and convergence. IP is a service platform instead of IP as a simple communications technology is the key to unlocking the value of IP in the future.
A perfect summation. I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today. This podcast is brought to you by Alcatel-Lucent. And for more information on how IP enables service creation, please visit searchtelecom.com. Thank you.